Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report under lockdown. Welcome back to the show. Everyone who's already in the chat saying, where's John? I don't want to run the intro when like three people are on the stream. Just hold for one sec. But now there's a bunch of people here. You're all here. I'm here. You know who else is here for the first time under lockdown on the Damage Report? Anna Kasparian, how's it going?
It's going good. It's going well.
Yeah.
What's going on? Yeah,
I'm so happy that I'm able to do this.
Yeah. You asked me to do this like the first week that we were on lockdown, but I just couldn't get that sweet, sweet video quality that you have. But now I got it on lock. Yeah.
I think it looks pretty great. I think you nailed it, honestly.
Like after a while.
You have this nice sort of tone to it. It's very like creamy smooth. Yeah, it's pretty good.
Thank you.
I think you might have me beat. Maybe we'll poll the audience once some more people are in here. but anyway, I'm glad that you're here because we have a lot of important stories to talk about, a lot of fun stories to talk about. And for everyone who is in the chat and thought that they heard me stroking my beard while I was waiting to start the show, that's not what was happening. Not entirely, anyway. We're going to be reading some of your super chats and comments throughout, so feel free to get involved. If you haven't already hit the like button, that would be a great way to start off this whole experience we're embarking on. Let more people know about the stream and all of that. And with that, I think that we can probably get into the first story. I mean, we're going to be talking about the lockdown protests. We're going to be talking about AOC's challenger, Fox News misinformation, Steve Mnuchin, what's money? He doesn't really know. And so it should be a lot of fun. So why don't we launch into it, Anna?
Let's do it.
Okay. In multiple states across the country, right-wingers, not entirely, but almost entirely right-wingers, are now protesting against quarantine measures that have been put into effect by mayors, governors, and all of that. They're not happy about it, and we are finding out more about these protests as time goes on. For instance, one of the Michigan groups, the Michigan Freedom Fund, according to Progress Michigan, is apparently a Betsy DeVos-backed corporate front group. So Betsy DeVos, of course, in the Trump administration, has been providing funding to these. And what you find basically, I'm not going to run through the entire thing, but a lot of the organizations, the very wealthy organizations that are funding these groups, regardless of what state they're in, are the same sorts of organizations that were funding the Tea Party back not that many years ago. And so, and probably I'm going to assume not for the same obvious reasons, but the same implicit reasons. To create chaos, to benefit the economy from their perspective. And again, if people have to die, Anna Kasparian, it's not going to be them. Betsy DeVos isn't going to be exposed to coronavirus.
It's really incredible to see what's happening. And I think that there are two things that we need to consider when trying to understand what's at play. So on one hand, there's an issue with misinformation campaigns. I know from personal experience, people in my personal life have asked me all sorts of questions about conspiracy theories that they've read on social media. And so you unfortunately have to not only debunk those conspiracy theories, but urge people to take these social distancing measures seriously. There are bad actors at play, of course, both when it comes to misinformation and when it comes to funding these types of protests. But I think that it would be a mistake to avoid addressing a very real concern that people have. Look, we forget that Congress has really failed in offering a real financial solution for people who have been laid off. So some of these people are clowns and they don't know what they're doing and they're just listening to what Fox News tells them to do. On the other hand, though, I think there are people who aren't able to pay their bills. They've been unable to file for unemployment because the unemployment system in every state is overwhelmed and overburdened. They're not even able to get through and apply. And then the $1,200 stimulus check is honestly nothing when you consider how much people need to pay in their debts, in their bills, to provide for their families, to put food on the table. So I think there are so many different factors at play, but we need to be hyper-focused on the failures of Congress, because if people felt comfortable staying home and not working, if they knew that they were taken care of, I think that this would be less of an issue. But when people are feeling that economic frustration, coupled with the misinformation they might be seeing in conservative media, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I agree. And a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about Steve Mnuchin, how much $1,200 can actually buy you, and give some suggestions for what the next step should be when it looks like there aren't going to be any next steps, that Congress is pretty much done. As far as I've seen, though, most of these groups so far, I don't see them rallying for Congress to, for instance, make the, you know, the version of UBI that we have right now persistent, you know, for the next year or whatever, or to extend sick leave to all, you know, all Americans, or institute single payer so that people's health care won't be tied with their continued employment. These sorts of policy-based solutions for the problems that we face that we might suggest, they seem a little bit less interested in that and a little bit more interested in sticking it to Democratic governors and proving that they're tough. One of the reasons that they're probably holding guns, which we're going to get to. But I want to read a couple of quotes from some of those involved because I've been sort of speaking for them. Let me let them speak for themselves. So let's start with Ashley Smith, co-founder of Reopen NC for North Carolina. That is a group that she started after seeing an online rumor that the lockdown order was going to be extended until June. It wasn't true, and in fact, North Carolina's lockdown order is going to end in 3 days unless it's extended, but the group remains, even though it's based on nonsense. And so here's what she had to say. When it's my time to go, God's going to call me home. I think that to live is inherently to take risks. I'm not concerned about this virus any more than I am about the flu. So a couple months of increased education about, you know, what coronavirus represents, how it is different from the flu, has been successful in educating some Americans, but not others. And I would remind people again that it is one thing to say, I am willing to take a risk with my life. But this is not like, you know, this isn't cliff diving. Like, cliff diving doesn't catch, okay? You can't spread it to other people. This virus, you very much can. And you might be fine if you get exposed to it, but you could very easily expose other people who are not going to make it.
I have to be honest. I'm actually uneasy and afraid right now. So I just want to be, I know I'm putting myself in a super vulnerable position by even admitting that, but we're in a dire situation where the entire country is not on the same page. People don't agree on what we need to do to combat this virus. A lot of people have already died, and that's with the social distancing in place. If these red states continue to loosen restrictions, if, you know, right-wingers, talking about private citizens, refuse to even follow the social distancing guidelines, more and more people are going to die. And any positive development that we've seen is going to be undone. And I worry about that because on one, I mean, we have Donald Trump as the president. He changes his opinion from one day to the next. He was threatening to reopen the economy. And then he had a meeting with business leaders yesterday for an hour and he changed his mind. And he said that we wouldn't reopen the economy until we had widespread testing available. And then today it seems like he's wavering on his last opinion on, you know, this whole situation. So we lack leadership in the executive branch. There's no question about that. We lack leadership when it comes to Congress's actions in providing the financial relief that actually meets the crisis that we're in right now. And we have endless misinformation campaigns on conservative news sites, conservative cable news outlets, and on social media.
Yeah.
So I don't see anyone really tackling these issues in a substantive way, and it's terrifying.
Yeah, and in terms of the misinformation, we're going to have more on that in just a bit. I want to go through a couple more of these quotes. Ashley Smith goes on to say, we are not promised a pathogen-free existence. We do not have a constitutional right to not get a virus. Yeah, I guess it's not specifically laid out, but there seems to be some concern about the health and welfare of American citizens in various parts of the Constitution. Let's see. We've got Brenda Essman. So that's one of the protesters that was interviewed. We're tired of not being able to buy the things we need, go to the hairdressers, get our hair done. Well, yeah, you know, if a few people have to die, so you can get your hair done. That may have to happen. There was one interesting interaction, I thought, though. So there's a reporter for Wood TV 8, Leon Hendricks, who went up to a protester and asked him, are you concerned about this virus? And the protester, Joseph Dixon, responds, I was in the beginning until I've done my research and found out the realities and the media's overreach on it, and that it's not as serious as they made it out to be. And that's why I'm here, because I feel that they are overreaching, overreacting, and crushing our small businesses, crushing our economy. Then the reporter had a follow-up question. I see you're wearing a mask, so you must have some level of concern. And he was, by the way, not just wearing a mask. He was wearing a full balaclava, which might have been to intimidate people. And he says, look, well, I still have common sense. Okay, well, demonstrate it, because you are willing to put on the mask to protect yourself in the short term, since none of the people these protests were social distancing. They were packed in there. But you're not necessarily concerned about other people being exposed if these measures are taken away preemptively. And, and there's other people talking about, like, that the huge number. So one, a rally organizer, Roseanne Punkowski. So she heads up Michigan Conservative Coalition, a pro-Trump group. She said they were predicting huge numbers of people falling ill and dying, and that wasn't the case. Well, look, I'm looking at New York just added some extra deaths to 2 days ago. So they had been previously unreported, but now they've been confirmed. So now the death count for April 14th is listed as 6,185. Yesterday was nearly 2,800. Maybe that's not a lot for some people. I don't know what horror movies they watch every day, but that seems pretty bad to me. I mean, one day, two 9/11s, that seems pretty bad.
We have these high numbers given the fact that we're 4.5 months into the year and we have been practicing social distancing. So imagine if we hadn't been doing that, how high the numbers would be, right? So a lot of people feel this need to compare the number of deaths to what the country experiences in any given year with deaths caused by the common flu. Mm-hmm. But this virus is not the common flu. And I feel like a broken record because I've been making this argument over and over again. For instance, you can be completely asymptomatic and you can spread this virus like wildfire. It's highly contagious. You do not need to show symptoms in order to spread it. And it attacks your respiratory system aggressively. So if you have underlying health conditions, respiratory conditions, if you have diabetes, if you have any issues with your organs, like chronic kidney failure, that kind of stuff, you are very likely to suffer the dire consequences of this virus. And remember, we have this for-profit healthcare model, which means that our hospitals do not have enough beds in order to take care of all of these sick patients, right? So remember, like, people keep talking about these ventilators and oh, the national stockpile. Why do you think the national stockpile needed to have these ventilators, respirators, and all the medical supplies that we need? Because hospitals do not find it profitable to buy this equipment and just store it in their hospitals when most of the time it's not being used. When you have a for-profit healthcare system, it's just not in the best position to take care of a giant number of people or a giant influx of people who become sick in the middle of a pandemic. So the reason why we're social distancing is not only to save lives, that's the number one underlying issue here, but it's also to ensure that our healthcare system and our hospitals are not overwhelmed and overburdened with the number of patients who end up contracting this virus. You know, there are a number of deaths now rising that aren't directly caused by COVID-19. It's indirectly caused by COVID-19. So if you're a cancer patient, for instance, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to get the type of medical attention that you would usually get when we're not dealing with a pandemic. So people are dying in their homes right now because of COVID-19, but also because they have other health issues that aren't being taken care of because the hospitals are overwhelmed. These people are not only playing with their own lives, they're playing with the lives of other people who are trying to do things responsibly. And it's just like, it's devastating to see it.
Yeah. 100%. And to see these people rallying, and by the way, the rallies are basically Trump rallies. People have the MAGA hats. There's, let me show you this one photo. There's bring guns. Guns have absolutely nothing to do with it, but they're packing, assault rifles. That's necessary. And it's, they trust Trump. I mean, like the reporting from a couple days ago where he kept asking and kept having to get corrected when he said, why can't we just let it wash over America, let all these people die with no defense whatsoever. Like, have you seen, like, prominent former Trump supporters, maybe in the media or something, saying, wait a second, that seems like a bit of a red line to cross, consigning hundreds of thousands or millions to die with no protection whatsoever because you think it's easier? But that's gone. That story's gone. I'm literally the only person that's going to mention it today, and tomorrow, not even me. We're all going to move past his theory that we should just let millions die.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Dr. Oz has a theory of one way we could start to resume normal operations in America, but it does have a bit of a cost, but it's a cost he's willing to bear.
Well, first, we need our mojo back. Let's start with things that are really critical to the nation where we think we might be able to open without getting into a lot of trouble. I tell you, schools are a very appetizing opportunity. I just saw a nice piece in The Lancet arguing that the opening of schools may only cost us 2-3% in terms of total mortality. And, you know, that's any life is a life lost. But to get every child back into a school where they're safely being educated, being fed, and making the most out of their lives with a theoretical risk in the backside, it might be a trade-off some folks would consider. We need to get industry back, supply lines. I mean, things that we can do without putting the nation at risk.
That is madness.
That is an incredible statement. He referred to opening up schools in the middle of a pandemic extremely appetizing.
An appetizing option.
And made it seem like losing 2-3% of the children in this country is not that big of a deal.
Yeah, or them getting the virus and then bringing it home and transmitting it to the rest of their family. Like 2-3%. It was a very nice piece he read in The Lancet. Very nice. No, I've read like nice poems. I haven't read a nice evaluation of like since he put that out. There have been some speculation about exactly what he's referring to there. Best case scenario, the most charitable interpretation of what he's talking about there is thousands and thousands of deaths. And it's like it's kind of appetizing. I get appetized. I start to salivate when I think about those mass graves being dug. And Dr. Oz, the reason he's saying this is because this sort of rhetoric has gotten him on Fox News on a regular basis recently. And so this is the formula in modern media. If you want to make it in right-wing media, you have to be a monster, an enthusiastic monster, and you will be rewarded mightily. His next book, Trump will tweet about it, and he'll make a bunch of money. And why? Because he said to benefit, you know, the S&P, we should let some kids die.
Man, I don't even know what to say.
He's a doctor, Anna.
Yeah,
he's a
I know.
Doctor. Yeah, and with a sterling reputation too, by the way.
It's just so irresponsible. And what are we doing? I mean, and by the way, like we have a pretty significant, international audience, and I appreciate, and I'm happy that people live in better countries than we do. But it is hard to see the emails and the messages from people who have like a robust social safety net, who have actual leadership. And I don't know. It's tough. It's tough to deal with this every day.
And to see people like that considered serious. He can get on any show he wants, because he's a serious person. He's got doctor before his name. And he is going to be one of those people. Like there was another senator, I think it was Kennedy, that'll say, you know what, if we have to make sacrifices, and they are always, always, always talking about sacrifices that they don't have to make. They say we. They don't mean we. They mean you. He's not going to be bagging groceries at Pavilion. He's not going to be exposed. He's not going to be working the subways in New York City. He's going to be remote Skyping in to Sean Hannity's show. And all those Fox hosts, by the way, who are now like universally supporting these protests, you'll notice that they're shooting from home. Like, they could go into the media figures. We could go in. We could go to the TYT studio right now. It's an essential thing. You could do it in New York. They're choosing not to. Okay, so they're very supportive of forcing people to go back to work, but they're choosing not to. Why? Because they know how dangerous it is. They just won't extend the concern they have for their own lives to everyone else.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And just keep in mind that states like Texas have basically banned abortions in the middle of this pandemic. So they can go ahead and pretend like they're these pro-life warriors. But at the same time, you hear the type of commentary that we just heard from I was about to call him Dr. Phil.
Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz, yeah.
They both have
the
issues.
Kind of commentary we hear from Dr. Oz. I mean, just how incredibly like flippant they are about children getting sick, possibly passing this virus on to their parents and their families. And it's just, it's amazing. They've never actually cared about unborn like fetuses. Like, they've never actually cared about that. It's always been a political move to earn brownie points. And it's always been, you know, meant to punish women who happen to get pregnant when they don't want to get pregnant.
Yeah.
That's all it's always been. Because this pandemic has really revealed so much about the country we live in, how many of these politicians and pundits are really nothing more than frauds. We now know without a shadow of a doubt what these motivations really are. And the real question is, what are we going to do about it? Mm-hmm. Because I'm tired of it. I really am. And we have a broken system and a broken corporate media that really needs to change.
4 weeks now, we have been incredibly critical about the coronavirus misinformation that some in the media have been so willingly spreading. Chief among those are the personalities at Fox News, who from the very beginning, when they weren't downplaying coronavirus, they were spreading misinformation about it, and that has continued. And so you might remember a couple of weeks ago, Diamond and Silk said that the coronavirus death numbers are just made up. And I said at the time, this is going to be what they're all saying soon. Took about 4 days, and now they all say that those numbers are made up. And what do you know? Polls now show that the vast majority of Fox News viewers think that those numbers are fabricated. Here is a little chart. You're probably, if you're on mobile, good luck reading it, but I will sum it up for you. The people on the left are those who watch Fox News frequently. The orangish red bar are those who believe that fewer have died than the official count. And that is not only the plurality, that's about, it's above 40%, I believe. And you can see that if you get over to people who don't watch Fox News, almost nobody believes that. And most believe that more have died than the official count. That's also very similar to all respondents when you talk to them. It's also the truth, because we know that some people are not being diagnosed, they're not being treated, they're dying at home and thus not being counted. And I have no idea what the difference between the official numbers and the actual numbers are, and I feel perfectly comfortable talking about the official numbers. They are high enough that everyone should be outraged by them. But the idea that so many will have been so misinformed about those numbers and thus end up being, you know, very easy on Donald Trump about his response. If they don't believe that these numbers are true, then why should they be bothered by the fact that 30,000 Americans have died, Anna?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I mean, look, conspiracy theories might have a little credibility to them if it's a situation in which the rich and powerful benefit and the poor suffer, right? And right now, the reason why we're hearing from so many business owners and CEOs and people in positions of power urging us to get back to work is because this virus is hurting them financially, right? So yes, a lot of these corporations will end up getting bailed out. But those bailouts are only going to help stock portfolios so much. Eventually, the bailouts aren't going to do enough, and they're going to want people to go back to work, which is why they're spreading this misinformation and urging people to go back to work. Look, I'm saying all this because conspiracy theories don't make sense when people in positions of power are facing some financial hits, right? This is real, guys. This is real. There isn't a global conspiracy. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir. You have a smart audience. We have a smart audience at TYT Network. Like, this is the kind of message that needs to get through to the people who are most vulnerable to misinformation. And unfortunately, I don't know if it ever will.
Yeah.
That's why, look, our media has, in a lot of ways, divided the country. And so people get to pick and choose what kind of messages they like. It's like this a la carte situation. And really, like, this propaganda is negatively impacting 40% of the country. These are the Trump supporters who are not only going to end up risking their own lives and their family lives, they're going to risk all of our lives.
Yeah.
And I think, look, I don't know if this is a crazy proposal, but it is something that some of the states need to start considering. If states like California, Oregon, Washington have been doing their due diligence, they've been taking this seriously. I think, you know, Gavin Newsom is not my favorite politician, but he's done an excellent job in the state of California in coping with and dealing with this pandemic. If we're doing everything that we need to do to flatten that curve and other states aren't, should we have travel bans based on which state you live in? I don't know. There needs to be a solution because we're not all on the same page. And it's not fair to the people living in California or any other state where people are taking this seriously to suffer the consequences of people living in red states who aren't taking it seriously.
Yeah, that we would all suffer based on which state is most irresponsible. That which, you know, Ron DeSantis opens everything up, Florida starts flooding out and infects the rest of the country. That's a very real concern. I'm glad that you brought that up. Yeah.
And I want to be clear. I just floated something, right? I don't know if that's really a solution. It's not even something that I'm aggressively pushing for. But we do need to think of a plan B, because I don't see this as something that's going to be, you know, talked through rationally with the same people who are watching Fox News, listening to the bad, you know, the dishonest actors, and, you know, going out there and risking other people's lives. They're just not reasonable and they're not listening to the data and the facts. So we need to think about a plan B.
Yeah. And I would say, if you are a Trump fan, if you're a conservative and you believe that we're not being fair, that it is, these numbers are being made up, they're being artificially inflated, they're being used by the media to hurt Donald Trump. Well, like, just a couple days ago, remember he had that bat-ass crazy press conference with his propaganda video and his images saying the media downplayed it for months. Well, which is it? Are they downplaying it to hurt him, or are they like escalating it and being hyperbolic about it to hurt him? Like, are they doing both simultaneously? Whatever's most convenient, whatever helps Trump in the moment. I can't even follow what the conspiracy theory is. And of course, it just changes based on what he said. And one of the reasons, one thing I want to mention here is, it was to some extent one thing when it was Diamond and Silk or Laura Ingraham or whoever who were saying this number is made up. I don't remember who the guest was, but I had someone on a week or two ago and we were talking about this. My theory that eventually that would be what they fall back on. When the death count gets high enough, they're going to have to pretend that the death count is made up. And one of the issues with that theory before was, but Trump is saying that the number is true. What are they going to do? Like, he can't change on that. And I said at the time, he can change on that anytime he wants. It won't matter. And indeed, yesterday during his briefing, he said, I see this morning where New York added 3,000 deaths because they died rather than a heart attack. They say heart attack caused by this. So yeah, he just pivoted. And what is, like, Laura Ingraham would be like, hey, wait a second. That's not what you were saying last week. No. The number could get to 100,000 and they will say no one has died with a straight face. God.
This is, I mean, just when you thought the Trump presidency couldn't get worse, we get hit with a pandemic. I mean, and this is like the thing I can't get over. What were the chances? Like, what were the chances that there would be a global pandemic when he's in charge?
It's higher than otherwise. But yeah, look, 2 years ago, I wasn't thinking about it. I didn't think, you know, a crazy version of SARS or whatever is going to rampage through. Apparently, some responsible people, including like Obama had requested all this money in 2014. Dr. Fauci back in 2017 was saying this is going to happen. So some people were. I can't claim credit for that.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have that information.
Exactly.
You get what I'm saying? Like, we had no idea.
And I'm an idiot. Anyway. So for those two reasons, I was never going to predict it. When it comes to the government's response to coronavirus, the money they've dished out to help get us all through it, the little bit that has gone to us comes in the form of a $1,200 check, which to me didn't seem like much, but maybe I just don't have the right perspective. Here is an economic expert, Steve Mnuchin, on how long it should last.
These checks in the mail are direct deposit. It's really bridge liquidity for people as they go through these difficult times.
Bridge liquidity for about 8 weeks?
Well, I think the entire package provides economic relief overall for about 10 weeks.
So, thank you. I need bridge liquidity. I just need to get through for 10 weeks. And him sort of implying, and I understand we're going to finesse it in a bit, but implying that, like, no, you're good for literally months. It was strong, like, disconnected oligarch vibes and perfectly summed up by AOC, who tweeted, "It's your monthly rent, Michael. What could it cost? $10? Which is a great Arrested Development reference there by the representative. And look, he's not just saying the $1,200. He's talking about the unemployment as well, I suppose. This is the level of concern they have for us. People who are, they've lost their health insurance, they're worried about paying their rent, all of that. When it comes to business interests, he is in charge of a multi-trillion dollar fund that he can just make it rain for whoever he wants, whenever he wants. He can invest in the stock market based on the decisions he's going to make in terms of doling out that money, knowing that it'll have an effect on the share price of those stocks. It's like, yeah, you got your bridge liquidity. Now go away. The adults are in the room. We're talking about the serious concerns.
So I have so much to say about this. First off, not only is $1,200 a joke, and look, I don't want to minimize how much of an impact $1,200 can have for some people, right? But when you think about how much rent costs, how much food costs, how much healthcare costs, especially now that all these people have been laid off and they lost their health insurance as a result of that, $1,200 ain't going to cut it, especially if it's a one-time payment. Unemployment insurance under the stimulus package is actually robust. It's actually pretty good because you get an additional $600 from the federal government per week for up to 12 weeks. So about 4 months. And so, or is that 3 months? That's three months. Sorry.
Yeah.
So for 3 months. And so that's great. The unemployment insurance is great, except people are unable to apply for it because there aren't there isn't an infrastructure in place to deal with this massive number of people attempting to file for unemployment. 22 million Americans have already filed for unemployment. So look, really the stimulus check is what so many people are relying on right now. And David Dayen from the American Prospect reported this week that because of the inaction of the Treasury Department under Steve Mnuchin's watch, banks can confiscate that money straight from your account. It can be garnished straight from your account as soon as it hits that account.
Yep.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, and it could have been protected, but they chose not to.
Exactly. They chose not to protect it. Steve Mnuchin and the Treasury Department decided to give, honestly, another little goodie to the big banks and to creditors rather than protect average Americans who need that help. And by the way, we are going to cover one other story today about how the corporations that are going to receive trillions of dollars in bailouts are allowed to pay their investors dividends. So if you happen to be an investor, which you probably are not, because the vast majority of those investors are in the top 1%, even though there's no economic activity right now, people aren't working, people have been laid off, consumers aren't able to spend, retail is down 8%, the very companies that needed that bailout are then going to turn around and pay dividends to their investors. Mm-hmm. That's why what we're seeing in the stock market right now is a complete and utter disconnect from what the real economy looks like. Yeah. All these people have been laid off, but the stock market has actually been doing pretty well. It's amazing.
Yeah, the stock market goes up every Thursday when the new unemployment numbers come out, which tells you everything you need to know. And we're going to get to those numbers in one sec. You know, what could we have done hypothetically instead of the $1,200 and then they never talk about regular people again? Well, Keith Boykin tweeted out what different countries are doing. Australia, close to $2,000 a month. Canada, almost $1,500 a month. Denmark, $3,300 a month. France, up to $7,600 a month. And you see, and that can go on hypothetically for a long time. Us, you better, maybe mac and cheese, maybe Pop-Tarts, you know, invest in something that is high calorie for the dollar if you want to make it last that long. And I'm glad that you brought up the unemployment. The new numbers, 5.2 million more, roughly 22 million so far in the past month. And that's the people who have been able to actually get through. And I know people who struggled day after day after day after day to finally make it through the system, which was not set up for. Like, it's not like the unemployment system was doing well before this crisis and was a smooth thing to move through. It wasn't. And they didn't care because, again, it's something that serves those who are poorest, those who are most needy. That's not the priority of people like Steve Mnuchin. Representative AOC is going to be facing a primary challenger. Yes, someone has decided to jump into the volcano as the human sacrifice on the part of Wall Street to go up against AOC and get what I'm going to predict is absolutely shredded this election. But we do have someone, Anna, and The Intercept has done a great job of putting together some of the information that we now have of who is backing this individual, Michelle Caruso Cabrera. And so really fast, we're going to give our commentary, but disclosures show that at least two dozen finance industry professionals, including several prominent private equity executives and investment bankers, made early donations to Caruso Cabrera, a former CNBC contributor. A little bit of information you should know about her. She was a registered Republican until a few years ago, authored a 2010 book advocating for conservative positions, including ending Medicare and Social Security, which she called pyramid schemes. And she has announced last week that she's collected nearly $1 million in fundraising over the first quarter, including backing from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which obviously backs a lot of progressive congressional candidates. Oh, sorry, I mean right-wing Republican congressional candidates who were there to deregulate Wall Street and stuff like that. Are you worried for AOC? Should she be worried, Anna?
You know, look, I'm not worried right now. She is popular in her district. Her voters seem to really love her. And I think these types of stories that really reveal who's funding Caruso and what her political ideology really is only going to help AOC. But the thing that does make me worry is, you know, we underestimate how much power there is on the wrong side. And for all the negative feedback we heard from establishment Democrats in regard to progressive candidates who wanted to challenge, you know, moderate Democratic incumbents, I'm worried that we haven't heard much from Democratic leadership about this challenger to AOC. You know, it's interesting to see that. But I would like to see Mama Bear Pelosi, you know, stand up for Representative Ocasio-Cortez.
We'll see. I don't know about that. We do have one. So the DCCC, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, says that it is prepared to help out both Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as well as Rashida Tlaib in their reelection should they request help. So look, good. Keep an eye on that because we'll see how much help will it actually come. What conditions will there be? But at least they want you to believe they're being consistent in defending incumbents at the very least.
By the way, did conservatives like go out of their way to find a Latina to go up against AOC? Like, or was that just a coincidence? I'm wondering.
I'm going to guess yes. When I saw the name, I was like, well, yeah, of course. I will say, look, on name alone, Michelle Caruso Cabrera, that is a cool name. And I think you're not going far enough, Anna, because you're right that they went to find a Latina. But I think that they also wanted someone with a hyphenated name.
Yes, yes, I was going to say that too. It's like incredible. A young, attractive Latina woman with a hyphenated name.
Well, because I haven't seen a picture. I don't know if she's attractive, but yes, probably.
She is. I mean, she's CNBC host. Like they don't, when it comes to women specifically, they don't allow unattractive women on TV. Like, let's just keep
that's
it
true.
Real.
That's true.
Yeah. No, but I did want to just quickly mention, it does give you some insight into how conservatives think about voters or what appeals to voters. Like, they think that the district that elected AOC is just full of a bunch of dummies who don't know anything about politics. They don't know anything about what impacts their lives directly. They just voted for her because she happens to be a young, attractive Latina woman. So they're like, let's just find a young, attractive Latina woman to put her up against AOC and she'll win, especially with Wall Street support. But, you know,
maybe.
Yeah, I'm thinking they're in for a rude awakening if they think that's all it takes.
I think so. And I have one piece of evidence on that in 1 second. But on the name thing, if I were to Google or go on Twitter and search for MCC, do you think they're trying to make MCC a thing for her to counter AOC?
I'm going to go with yes. I guarantee you they're trying to make it a thing.
Yeah. Okay, so really fast, a little bit more on her. Her book's name was You Know I'm Right, More Prosperity, Less Government. And you know that when a right-winger writes a book that says You Know I'm Right, she's trying to reassure you that she's right-wing, by the way. Anna, do you happen to know who wrote the foreword for her book? Who would you
Sean
guess?
Sean Hannity.
That's Sean great. Hannity. No, so that's a great guess. So think more economic right winger, less media right winger.
Alan Greenspan.
That is a great guess, but no, it's Larry Kudlow.
Oh!
Of the Trump administration, people.
That's incredible.
It's just amazing. And look, you might say it is unfair of us to judge her based on her party ID and what she advocated in foreign books. That's perhaps fair. So we should judge her based on what position she now has, and I would, but on her website, there's nothing about her policies, so I have no idea what she actually believes. What I do know, though, is AOC has less reason to be worried than some, because the new FEC filing day just happened, the Q1 numbers, AOC literally raised the most for House Dems,
wow.
$2.7 million. Katie Porter with $2 million raised.
Get it. Woo! Love
she
it.
Is
Love
really
it.
Something, man. She is on fire. But yeah, AOC. And that's why I made the volcano analogy. Like, you were right. Maybe the media will rally around her and maybe Pelosi will endorse her. But it seems like a human sacrifice from Wall Street. That's what it seems like to me.
Yeah, they're desperate. But I love seeing the political activism in districts like AOC's. And we need to spread that like rapid fire.
Yeah. And by the way, why is the Democratic Party, when they see those fundraising numbers, because that's all they care about, right? Okay, well then why not have more AOCs and more Katie Porters? Why not get more of those sorts of people that can raise money organically from the sort of people you want to raise money from in huge numbers? By the way, taking pressure off of the DCCC and other party organizations to have to defend them, they won't have to because she'll be able to defend herself. Shouldn't you want more of that? But of course, no because
candidates
the cost is
like
too
that-
high.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, I mean, these are the types of candidates, I'm lucky they got through, but they challenge the power structure that the Democratic Party has enjoyed and appreciated. You know, we got to really think about this in terms of power and what really motivates certain incumbents and certain leadership to act the way that it does.
So far as president, Donald Trump has not had much trouble keeping his base supportive of him, but we are in a special time, an emergency, with a death toll that is rising by literally thousands every day. And so, especially based on his extremely slow, begrudging response to the coronavirus, if there was going to be a time where some of his loyal supporters might start to question that support, it would seem like now would be the time. But I am not an expert on this subject matter, so we decided to bring on an expert, a world-renowned cult brainwashing expert and mental health professional, Stephen Hassan. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thanks for having me, John.
Glad to have you on. I wish that we could be talking about something a little bit less ominous.
Yes.
But I know that this is something that you've been thinking about recently, how his base will respond to what passes for leadership during an emergency like this. What are some of your thoughts?
I think that basically there are so many different competing cult groups within the cult of Trump that are influencing Trump, but also have their followers that have their allegiance to them, that's part of the confusing messaging because the wealthy financiers that want to promote money, 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 are giving him one message. The religious folks who are saying this is all about the last days and Armageddon and have faith, and if you're meant to be, you know, taken and die, as long as you're right with the Lord and follow those particular leaders, then everything's fine. But then there are the economists and others who know about business and are saying we need to listen to science and we need to listen to the experts. And I think that's part of the confusing messaging that's going on back and forth. As far as people questioning Trump, I think there are many opportunities, but they need to be coming from family members and friends and confidants who raise questions in not an attacking way or not saying, see what a liar Trump is, but to be more strategic, which is what my whole approach is about, not talking down to people who are involved with the cult, not calling them names like you're stupid or you're crazy or I wish you would die, but acting respectfully and saying, help me understand, help me step into your shoes. I think that there should be more concentrated focus put on top leaders of different mega churches that are in the cult of Trump. And when they start defecting, then all their followers will defect as well. So I think and I should say Pat Robertson, if I'm remembering correctly, when Trump threw the Kurds to the Russians, said something like Trump has to be careful because he may lose the blessing of God. That was the closest thing to a crack in the cult of Trump base that I heard. But there's definitely opportunities here to create what's known as cognitive dissonance or conflict within people's minds between should I stay home, you know, and socially distance, or I like the term physically distance, or do what my pastor or my prophet or my apostle tells me to do and go to church. And so there's definitely conflict happening, and some people are disobeying their apostles and staying home, and that those people need to be encouraged that they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I hope that they're receiving that from the top, from their social circles, from everywhere. You know, you mentioned that we should be focusing on the leadership, and you mentioned mega churches. I don't remember the exact names, but I'm sure that you've seen anecdotally that I believe at least two leaders of churches who had said, you know, we're not going to abide by these recommendations to physically distance ourselves, they eventually died from coronavirus. And I wonder if the people who follow them, if they will see that as an act of bravery and self-sacrifice, or if maybe it'll be a moment to potentially like awaken and wonder if they should have been following this individual, or if perhaps if both the group and the leader had followed scientists, if they might have had some better outcomes.
It's a very good question. And I'd say the critical thing, and I'm hoping to hear much more of this, is for dedicated, fervent Christian ministers who actually know the New Testament should be reaching out to the people in these churches where the leaders have died to actually remind them of what Jesus taught and what the New Testament is. It's a great opportunity to help people to wake up from that. Mm-hmm. I don't think people are going to necessarily arrive at that on their own. But again, it depends on who's in their circle of trust and whether or not people are seeing the role modeling of fervent Christian ministers and other churches that are preaching the gospel but are saying we need to listen to what the Bible says, which is listen to the governmental authorities is what it says in the New Testament. according to ministers that I know.
Yeah. For some of his base, the group that isn't necessarily following him based on, you know, their religious beliefs, but a more ideological or, you know, liking the idea of him as a strong leader who's going to return America to greatness, this sort of thing, that he campaigns based on this. That's his brand, sort of. I wonder, do you think that can that hold, and for what percentage can that hold, in a time when the economy is doing absolutely horribly? You know, another more than 5 million people entered the unemployment rolls this last week, and that's probably an undercount. The death toll is going up significantly every day. If that starts to get to the 50,000, the 100,000, the 200,000, will that potentially cause some people to question if he is the authoritative figure that can keep them safe that he presented himself as?
Yes, I do think that's the case. And again, a major piece is sources of information that people are relying on. So if they're like plugged into Breitbart News or Alex Jones or Fox News and they're not paying attention to anything else, they're going to stay a lot longer than people who have access to other points of view, especially if they have access to the internet. I also want to say that there's a rule of thirds that I think about, which is, you know, one third will probably stay faithful or brainwashed. One third would leave, and one third could go either direction depending on other influence variables that are happening. So that's what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, and so I guess, like, we've had this sort of conversation before. You know, if he gets a second term, I'm sure we'll have it again at some point. But right now, we're...
Please don't say we're going to get a second term.
You never know. I don't want to put that out there.
I know, but I feel like only if they cheat will they get a second term.
Well,
so I'm hoping for paper ballots for everybody.
That's true, and the ability to actually vote and not expose yourself to coronavirus. So I guess as someone who has been following this, I mean, you talked about these potential groups, these thirds that you might break it into. From your point of view, or I suppose from Trump's point of view, how worried should he be going into this election in terms of his ability to keep that base satisfied, to potentially grow it? In comparison to maybe a year or 2 years ago, how worried do you think he should be?
I think he's very worried. And I think, and I literally just made a little video saying, after he said he claims total authority to make all the decisions, that the cult leader playbook is to never leave power, to extend it. So my unfortunate prediction when he first was elected president was that he, when it came to the second term, would create a false flag, a dirty bomb incident or something, declare martial law, and stay in power. Now with the pandemic, and apparently William Barr is making explorations on whether or not these emergency powers can be put into place. It really depends so much on major decisions and people with integrity who love the Constitution, people who want the separation of church and state, in the military and in the intelligence areas coming together to stand up against this cult leader, cult of Trump.
Dark words. But
sorry,
you're being honest.
That's how I see it.
Yes. And, you know, for everyone at home, if you do know individuals who are part of one or another of these groups that we've been talking about, you should definitely look into Stephen's writing, because I think he's done a lot of great thinking and has created a path, a framework for people to actually get through. And so I appreciate both your past work and also joining us on the show once again.
Thanks so much for having me, John. Love to do it again.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.